Oh, hi, my name is Louis. I'm a math undergrad and a computer programming enthusiast, and I've also had the privilege of doing GRIIL Summer of Code with Boost this summer. And now I'll be presenting my work of this summer, which is Boost HANA, a library for metaprogramming in an expressive way using C++ 14. So first, I'll start with a small primer to set things straight regarding ConstExpert, because there are some misconceptions, and it is important that we make everything clear, because otherwise we won't really get what's happening next. Then I will show how it's possible to unify type-level computations, like in the Boost MPL, and value-level computations, like in the Boost Fusion library, into a single library and with the same syntax. Then I will explain the building blocks, the underpinning concepts in the library. I will also present some case studies just to show that it can be actually used to solve real problems. And finally, we will discuss some implementation techniques. And I've also got some bonus if we have the time. Okay. But before we even dive into this, let's ask ourselves, why do we even metaprogram? What are the motivations for it? Well, so one possible use case is loop unrolling. So you give me a function, and basically, based on a number n that's known at compile time, I'd like to call that function f n times, right? And we really want the function calls to be expanded at compile time, so we don't want to do it in a loop. So that's one possible reason why we might want to use metaprogramming. Then we can also do type computations. So typically, we're given a sequence of types, and what we want to do is perhaps query something about those types. So it could be that so you give me a couple of t's, right? And you want to know which one has the smallest size. Or you might want to synthesize something about these types. For example, order them in an order that minimizes the element requirement when you declare a member in a struct. Or you could do anything like compute the common type between all of those types and things like that. Another technique that we need metaprogramming for, and that is pretty much well known, is expression templates. The basic concept is that we write normal C++ expressions, but instead of actually evaluating those expressions, we build a tree representing those expressions, and then we can move around in those trees and modify them, traverse them, and perform eventually domain-specific optimizations. So in this example, I'm adding two matrices here, but A, here. And it's a tree that represents the fact that represents the action of adding two matrices, but it's not really doing anything yet. And then when we actually fetch an element inside of that sum, well, it just has to go fetch the corresponding elements in each of the matrices and then add this instead of adding the whole matrices. So it's a technique, but it's hard to implement, right? So we need tools for that. Of course, there are more use cases like compile time task ordering. So you give me a set of tasks; they all have dependencies between them, and I'd like to compute. I'd like to order them in a way that all the dependencies are respected, and I would like to do that at compile time. So basically, you have a compile time graph, and you want to do some kind of linearization, maybe using a topological sort or something. But you need some kind of framework to be able to do that. Dimensional analysis. So you have quantities, right? But there are units associated to those quantities. You do computations. And the goal is to make sure that the units will always fit. So this is another place where you actually need metaprogramming. Introspection. So you have your user-defined struct. And you basically want to iterate over the members or query something about the members of your structure in a generic way. These are all reasons why you might want to do metaprogramming. Of course, it's mostly for library writers, but still, we need it. Okay, now what's the problem? Well, the problem is that the standard lacks proper tools. Standard stdouble, it is really low level. We don't have any high-level algorithms on stdouble. The interface is pretty basic. We have like stdget, stdoublecat, but nothing really high-level to solve non-trivial tasks. And also, it compiles very slowly. If you create a tuple with a lot of elements in it, it compiles very slowly. And there is no standard way to do type-level computations. Of course, we have type threads, and we have stdconditional and stuff like that. But for anything non-trivial, we still have to resort to other libraries like BoostMPL, which is non-standard. And it might be a good idea to solve this problem of metaprogramming once and for all in a good way and standardize it if everybody's all right with it. So anyway. And I need a solution because I want to solve some non-trivial metaprogramming problems. So I built HANA, which provides a very expressive and complete interface. There are a lot of algorithms, and they are very high level. So you can do, for example, you can compute all the permutations of a tuple, you can slice a tuple, you can do all this kind of stuff that would usually be just like a zoo of std tuple and std integer sequence. Well, now it's all hidden under a nice and expressive interface. The compile time performance is much better than Boost Fusion and std tuple because of some implementation techniques that I will show later. And it also unifies type level and value level metaprogramming so that you don't need two different libraries like the BoostMPL and Boost Fusion to do this. So you can do everything you can do with MPL and Fusion in HANA in a single library and with the same syntax, which is a big thing. Okay, now, why won't ConstExpr save us? Well, so this is like a guru of the week style question. Is this code valid? Just stare at it a bit. It's not, right? Even though the I here is ConstExpr. Is this code valid? It's basically the same code, but I just ripped out the template. I just ripped out the template, and it makes it clearer that this can't possibly work. Excuse me. What?
Why is the previous one? Why is that valid?
No, it's not valid. The question was, why is that valid?
Why
is it valid? Okay, sorry. So it's going to, because I here is not a consent expression. Because, yeah, it's not a consent expression. Actually, the thing that happens, and it's pretty tricky, and it bugs people up, but the thing that happens here is that even though this is constexpr, you lose the constexpr-ness of the expression when you pass it to the function. It doesn't compile with Clang, it doesn't compile with GCC, and so it doesn't work. And if you just strip the template, if you think about it, it's really just the same because this is just like explicitly instantiating the previous function, but with int in it, right? And this can't possibly work because this function must be possible to call this function with both constant expressions and non-constant expressions. What if you pass something that's runtime here? You can't possibly static answer it. So yeah, it only makes sense that this won't compile, and it doesn't. But that's a big problem. And what does it means basically that. You can't generate a constant expression inside a function if it depends on a parameter. That's basically it. And it's very important because it means that the return type of a function may only depend on the types of its arguments, not on their values, even if you pass in constant expression. Is everybody following? This is like of utmost importance for the rest. This is really, really important because, sometimes people think that we're going to be able to do some heterogeneous computations with constexpr, but the reality is that it just doesn't change anything. It makes it possible to do heterogeneous computations inside constant expressions, but it doesn't actually change the inner implementation of a library. Is everybody kind of following, or it's pretty important? Okay. So here's the solution. You need to actually encode the value of the argument, right, inside its type. That's the only way. And so you use a student integral constant or something equivalent, doesn't matter. For this reason, HANA provides an equivalent to student integral constant. It overloads the plus, minus, and arithmetic operations and stuff like that, comparison, so that you can actually, so int one as some type and int two as some type, and it returns like a student integral constant of three, right? So they have different types, and so you can keep the contextfulness of the whole expression by storing it always in the type of the resulting expression. Is everybody following me here? Okay, and so these guys here are actually variable templates, okay? So this is just like creating a student integral constant int one and then default initializing it. But it's just a shortened syntax. I do this with expression variable templates, okay? And yeah, the boost HANA consent assert here is just because inside the implementation, I can't put static assert at the moment because inside the implementation, I use lambdas and lambdas can't be consent expressions, but you still have the important thing here is that the value, the resulting, so the this expression actually returns a std true type or a std false type. And so the result of the comparison is actually held in the type, and so you can retrieve it anywhere. And use it as a consent expression. Okay. So this was just to make sure that everybody was on the same page for consent. Type and value unification. How do we do that in HANA? Well, so what we have basically is we have this world here, right? Which is the MPL. Okay. We have objects, which are actually types, and we have functions, which are meta functions. Okay? And we have this other world, fusion, where objects are, well, usual C++ objects, and functions are usual C++ functions. And my goal is to show that there is some kind of embedding from this world into this world. My goal is basically to find a bridge that makes it possible to go from this world here to this world and back again. And if I can keep all the information from this world here when I embed it in the fusion world, then we'll have a way to perform type level computations inside the value inside the fusion world. Yeah.
Isn't that what fusion is all about anyway? I thought that was the purpose of having fusion in the first place.
So the question is, isn't this already the purpose of fusion? Well, it turns out that you can't do type level computations with fusion because you can't instantiate a fusion vector with void in it. Tricky part. Yeah, that's a thing. People sometimes, and when I first started considering this problem, I was like, okay, so basically the MPL is the result of namespace of fusion. It isn't, because you can't have like incomplete types and stuff like that. So it won't work. Just like you can't instantiate a tuple with void in it, because it's gonna say like, hey, I can't have a member that's a void. All right? And so it's actually trivial. We take a type, okay, and we just wrap it in a dummy type wrapper. And in our fusion world, we're gonna consider these objects to be our types. That's it, okay? And then I use, and yeah, for now, just leave this empty. There's gonna be something here, but for now, for this part, you know, of the bridge, for going from type to value, you can just leave this empty, and then, using a variable template, we can make this more cute. So yeah, basically, if you want to represent an int in HANA or in the fusion world, you just trivially wrap it into the type wrapper, and then you have an object that represents int. Is everybody following? Okay. And now I know it's pretty much useless right now. I agree. Okay. What we're going to do now is find a way to cross that bridge, but in the other way around. And it's actually very easy. Just make TypeWrapper a null array meta function, in the boost MPL sense. Okay. Now what happens? If you give me a type angle bracket T, right, which is actually a type wrapper, if you give me that, I can an object of that type. I can just use decal type, then I get a real type wrapper of T, and then I fetch the actual T by using column-column-type. So I'm able to take a type, to represent it as a value, and then to take a value, but not any value, a type wrapper, and and bring it back to the MPL world. Pretty useless so far. But still, this is like we're building our embedding right now. Okay? And now let's so we lifted our objects right from types to values and the other way around. What happens when we try to lift meta functions? Yeah, they become functions. So here I'm implementing an add pointer thread, okay? As a function in the value world. This I expected to be a type wrapper of some kind of T capital. I retrieve it using the decalType colon colon type trick, okay? And then I apply an arbitrary type computation. So I receive an object from the fusion world inside my lambda, okay? Then I take this object, bring it back to the MPL world, do whatever computation, type computation I want here. Now, in this example, it's just to that pointer T, whatever, okay? It could be anything, any MPL stuff that you wrote, whatever, it could be anything. And then you shove it back into the value world by just wrapping it again in the type wrapper here. So what we've done is really do an arbitrary type computation with value syntax. Okay, and that's cool because then we can put these guys into tuples, right?
Question.
Yep.
Would it make sense to turn that into a cost expert?
The question is, would that make sense to turn this here into a cost expert? It would, but you can't in the current language. But it would. But it wouldn't. So you would be able to call add pointer inside a constant expression, which is kind of cool, but that just what it gives you. Like, it works even if you don't. You're just not going to be able to. Yeah, it works the same without. You don't gain like a core functionality, right? Just give me a second. Okay. And it turns out that this lifting process of taking an arbitrary meta function and turning it into a function is generic. So here, this is a variable template, a C++14 variable template, taking a template parameter, right? So f is an arbitrary meta function. And then, so you give me a meta function f. And I give you a lambda that works on type wrappers, and that just applies the meta function to those types, and then hides, you know, the result back, wraps the result back into the type wrappers. So this is a generic. Give me any meta function, and I'm from the MPL world, and I'm going to turn it into a meta function or whatever, however you want to call it, right? In the value world. And this is pretty cool because it means that whatever you wrote that worked with the MPL, you can now just meta function it, works with Anna. Of course, it also works for metafunction classes. Just the same, right? So here, I use f template apply, and blah blah blah. But it's just the same, and it works for templates. So when you, so if you give me a template, I'm just going to instantiate it with the contents of the types that you gave me, right? So what does that give us? These lifts, they allow us to use a function application syntax here. To do type computations. So yeah, and then so when you apply it, it gives you a type std tuple, a type wrapper, you know, that contains std tuple of int and char. And then when you decal type colon colon type it, you get back the std tuple in char. So that's the way we can just unify MPL and Fusion, because these guys. These are objects, right? So you can just shove them into tuples. So you can do whatever you want with them in the fusion world. Everybody following? So this is like when that clicked, I was like, okay, I think we got it. And yeah, so HANA building blocks. So like all generic libraries, generic libraries and generic programming. HANA is built around concepts that live mostly in the documentation and models of these concepts. And so that's what I'm going to present. I'm going to present the concepts and also a couple of models along the way. So first, and the concept, they come from functional programming, so you might not be really familiar with them, but it's a way to split things that works very well, and I know it by experience. So foldable. A foldable is any data structure that can be linearized. So it could be a tuple, it could be a pair, it could be some kind of optional, it could be a tree, whatever. As long as you can take the elements inside of your structure and put them one after the other in a line, right, you're a foldable. And it turns out that you can do a lot of useful stuff with it. For example, you can take all the elements inside a structure and call a function, right, with the linearization, with all the elements in their linearized form, as long, of course, as you know the number of elements at compile time. So this is the proposed stdepy. And it's just one function from the interface of foldables. Okay, this is the proposed stdepy. You give it a tuple or anything that can be folded. So you can give it also, you know, a maybe, which is a compile time std optional provided in HANA, or a std tuple or HANA tuple or a HANA range, which looks pretty much like a std integer sequence and so on. And you can unpack them, so call any function with their contents. Then you can count the elements of a structure that satisfy some predicate. You can also fold left, which is equivalent to accumulate, std accumulate. You can compute the sum, compute the product, count the number of elements in the structure, and so on. So these are useful algorithms. Iterable. Iterable represents data structures, so foldables, that can also be that can be linearized, but one element at a time. So in a strict evaluation context, these two concepts are different. But if you are in a non-strict evaluation context, like in Haskell, these two concepts actually coincide. So I won't really dive into this. It's not the goal, but it's an interesting observation for those that know Haskell. So you can fetch the first element of an iterable, the last one. You can go at a random index. You can drop any number of elements from the any prefix of such a data structure, and you can do other stuff like dropping elements from the front of the structure while some predicate or until some predicate is satisfied and so on. So useful too. Then searchable represents data structures that associate keys to values, but the keys do not have to be, they can be the same as the values. So for example, a tuple can be searched. And we also provide a map, a compile time map. It can be searched. So you can find the value associated to a given key, or you can find the value associated to a key that satisfies some predicate, or you can ask where, is this structure a subset of this other structure, and these kinds of methods, of algorithms. And list. List represents data structures that are basically isomorphic to a std tuple. And the reason why it's useful to have this concept, even though there is no wiggle room for the way the models are modeling the concept, because they are all isomorphic, is because it's still useful to have different implementations. So they do the same thing, but implemented differently. So, so of course, HANA tuple is a list, std tuple is a list, boost fusion vector is a list, boost fusion list is a list, and so on. And you can do a lot of stuff with lists. You can concatenate them, you can slice them, you can reverse, you can compute all the permutations, you can filter them, you can do, there are probably like 30 algorithms or something that you can do on them. So it's pretty flexible. Yeah, you can also take a prefix of any length or a prefix determined by a predicate in a list and so on. So these are like high-level algorithms. Yes.
Are these algorithms just wrapped
for us if you showed it in the earlier slides?
Okay, so the question is, are these only wrappers over like the MPL algorithms and so on? No, they're not. No, they're not, because you can use, look, this doesn't exist in the MPL. That's a string. That's completely runtime. And yeah, by the way, I didn't say it, but all the code that you see on the slides is actually, it works. It compiles. I just cut and paste it from source slides. And sometimes I do minor modifications, but yeah, it works. So, you know, in the MPL, this just doesn't make sense. This is a completely dynamic string, right? And I'm concatenating it. Not here. Okay, here, right? So I'm modifying a tuple that has something completely dynamic. There's that dynamic allocation in there. So no, the MPL just this is much more flexible than the MPL. And this example, I think everything that's here can be done with Fusion, except perhaps this part here. But yeah, so no, there are not just wrappers. Functor. Okay, so functor. The word is kind of misused in C++, but this is actually a concept from category theory. And in this talk, whenever you hear functor, I'm going to refer to that. And if I want to talk about a function or a function object or a lambda, I'm going to use that word. So it represents structures that can be mapped over. So it's like a container of whatever. You give me a function, and I'm going to map the function over each element in that container and give you back a container that contains, you know, the result of the mapping. So it's basically any structure that can be std transformed, basically. So once you get, once you're able to transform something, you can also apply a function on each element that satisfies some predicate. And you can also, you know, replace the elements that satisfy some predicate by just, you know, by just using the std transform with fancy functions. So so functors, they can be basically mapped over, and so you can functors, the models of functors that Anna provides are like maybe, which is like a compile time optional tuple functor, and I think I'm forgetting some, but that's basically what I see right now. Yes?
Just as a question, could you have used a function for twice? I mean, the function that you showed us earlier, the object that turns data parts into functions?
I'm sorry, I don't think I understand.
You used twice as a lambda, right?
Yes.
Lambda. Could you have used a function that you had earlier on, like a function underscore?
A function underscore.
Didn't you have that? In the very beginning, when you showed us how to lift metaverses?
This is not a lifted, this is std plus, actually.
So
no.
It has to be runtime
function.
What? It has to be runtime function.
No. Well, we're only, okay, so the question is, can this be, does this have to be a runtime function, right? And the thing is, this is a generic lambda, okay? The line between runtime function and compile time function, for whatever that means, is just blurry, because this can, if this is like a std integral constant here, if this is like a Hannah integral, this is going to return, this is just going to return, you know, the integral plus itself, which is again an integral. Its value is known at compile time. The compiler is just going to completely elide that function, right? So the value will be actually contained in the type, in the return type of that lambda. So you can use, yeah, sure, if you have a, yeah, sure. If you want, you can use a lifted meta function here, but then whatever you map that the twice on is has got to be a container that contains type wrappers, because meta functions, even lifted, only work on type wrappers. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Is everybody still following, or did I lose someone? Okay. Right, and then record. So it's probably the thing that's most useful for everybody here. So user-defined structures. So you define your structure, and basically it gives you the ability to use it as a compile time map. You can fold it, and you can also transform it. I mean, convert it to a map, where you can do more processing if you want. And so Hannah provides this macro to intrusively turn your structure into a, like a HANA, HANA record, right? Which is basically the same as boost, fusion, adapt, or define struct, or stuff like that. And there's also a way to do it non-intrusively, but I didn't show it here, but yeah, so it's possible. And you can also do it just without a macro if you want. It's quite simple, it's documented, yep. Yeah, sorry, I didn't introduce it. Yeah, so basically, yeah, okay, so I've got a lot of stuff, and sometimes I'm just, I just hope that people will be like, oh, okay, this is kind of intuitive. So basically, this returns a type wrapper with the decal type of this expression. So it's just a dummy way to create a unique tag, right? Because this type here has to be unique, and it's gonna be comparable at compile time. So like when you compare this guy with another, let's say with this one, it returns false. Well, std false type. And when you compare it with itself, it returns std true type. Because you can compare type wrappers too.
Okay, so in that last line where it says look up Louise's name, that second name there, that is that unique type there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how it looks.
This object. Yeah, exactly. So that's a type wrapper. Yeah. And so comparing two types that were, you know, lifted to the value level with type wrappers is just, it just is same. So it returns a std into raw constant, bool, a comma, std is same, tnu, right?
So instead of lambda, you could use a struct
in
there, right?
Yeah, whatever, yeah, sure. And I could have used like just a std into raw constant as long as these guys are different.
Right, okay, yeah.
Just anything that can be compared at compile time. Yeah, so sorry, I should have explained that. Sorry. Okay, so yeah, you can adapt your own structure. Okay, comparable, basically an equality comparable concept for heterogeneous stuff. Orderable, stuff with a strict weak ordering, so it's less than comparable, but for heterogeneous stuff. Okay, and HANA also provides a consistent numeric hierarchy, so it's useful when you need it. But basically, these are the arithmetic, you know, the usual arithmetic stuff from abstract algebra, so the hierarchy is split well because it's useful when you need it. But otherwise, you don't really need to bend your head against it. So, and there's more, like applicative, monad, traversable, logical, and other stuff that's more either important for the implementation or more functional, so I'm not really presenting it, but it also exists. And it's often useful, right? Okay, case studies. So we're off with Drew. Questions at this point? It can be like related to something more philosophical about the library, but yeah.
So in fusion transformations and things produce views, are you producing new types each time or a view into a type?
So the question is, in fusion when you like transform, a sequence, it returns a view that's lazily evaluated. What does HANA do? No, HANA doesn't return a view. It actually maps a function. Yeah, and so for the runtime performance, it might do a difference, but it will do a difference. Yeah.
Quick question. So what in MPL and Fusion does HANA not do?
Nothing. The question is, what does HANA not do that you can do in MPL and Fusion? Well, nothing, because it's really a strict superset. I actually took the examples from Fusion and MPL documentation and re-implemented them with HANA like a couple of weeks ago when I was writing the library. And I just wanted to make sure, like, okay, I can do that. I think there's like lower bound and upper bound from the MPL that's not implemented, but seriously, I don't think it's useful either. So yeah. Yep.
Yeah, just a completely different question. What is HANA stand for? Why the name?
It's heterogeneous combinators. Because so H heterogeneous and combinators. So it's pretty lame, but yeah, I needed a four-letter acronym that sounded all right and people wouldn't forget. So I think this is correct. And combinators are like stuff in purely functional programming. They're like functions that do not have state, basically. Okay, so case studies. Let's revisit our loop unrolling example from earlier. So what I do here, I create a range, which is basically a stood integer sequence, but more flexible because you can specify whatever the, you know, the beginning and the end. And then I for each over it. And every time, I just ignore the argument here. And every time, I'm just going to call the function. Okay. And so, yeah. And then I just call it with whatever n I want. So I, like, if everything works, I'm just going to call f n times. All right? And now, when you compile it, this is what it gives. So with O3, the compiler is really just doing what we want him to do. So this is a call to v, etc. So this is what we would expect. Type computations revisited. OK. So we wanted to find out what was the smallest type in, you know, you give me a couple of types, I'm going to give you the one with the smallest size. So don't get put off by this part here. I'm going to explain it. Okay, what happens here? You give me a couple of t's. I shove it into a tuple. To do that, I need to wrap them into types. So I create a tuple of types. And then I find the minimum with a custom predicate, which I'm going to explain. So with a custom predicate. And so this is going to return, right, the minimum element with respect to that, to the custom predicate. So it's going to return some kind of type, of type angle bracket t, okay, one of these t. And when I decal type that, I get back some kind of type wrapper. So this is actually a meta function. Because when I fetch colon type instead of inside of smallest, I'm getting the type that's inside the type wrapper. Okay, so this is really a different way to implement a meta function that would be, let's just say, different in the MPL. Okay, and now the special here, the comparator. So size of, it takes a type wrapper and returns a std integral constant. Well, actually, a Hannah integral constant that contains its size of. Okay, so that's like a lifted size of, and ordering. It basically it's a predicate that. It returns a predicate that takes like a and b, and then calls whatever function you give it. So in our case, size of, and then returns whether the first one is less than the other one. So I stole that from Haskell actually, and this gives us a very expressive way, right, to express what we mean. I mean, you can actually read this like English or almost, and this is a friggin' meta function. So I think this is neat. And it works. So here, I just fetch the colon type. And that's just a meta function. Is everybody all right with this example? OK. Now, we want to determine the optimal ordering to the optimal ordering in which to declare the members of a structure, right, to minimize the alignment requirement. So I read in Stack Overflow that the way to do that was to, or a good rule of thumb was to order them in decreasing order of alignment requirement. So let's just assume that it's the right way to do. I'm not really a pro with this kind of stuff. But what I do here is, so you give me a couple of types, right? And then I shove them into a tuple, OK? And then I'm going to sort them, just like we said. I'm going to sort them in decreasing order of alignment, OK? Here, the predicate, what it does, OK? These guys here are infix application. So this is equivalent to saying on parent greater comma thread std element of blah blah blah. Okay, it's just equivalent. It's infix application, but you can it improves the expressivity by quite a bit. So you can sort. You give it a predicate, and then it's basically the same as ordering from the last slide, right? But now you get a custom predicate here, which is greater. Is everybody, am I being clear? Or so it applies the thread alignment of, which returns a std integral constant containing the alignment of whatever it's given, of the type wrapper it's given, okay? And then it applies that, that function here to each of its argument and then compares it them with greater. So we're really just ordering them in decreasing order of alignment requirement. And now you might be saying like, hey, but this is completely useless because it's actually a variable template. So it's returning some kind of tuple, some kind of sorted tuple of type wrappers. And that's true. But wait. So yeah, okay, so this is exactly true, okay? It's just a tuple of type wrappers, and it's useless so far. But now you can do something useful with it. You might fetch the first element, you might unpack it into a template to create a specialization. It could be a tuple, or it could also be a user-defined type, or whatever. You can fold it if you want. You can do whatever you want with it now. And now I decided to unpack it into a tuple, to instantiate a tuple specialization, right, with its contents, and that's what it gives. Is everybody following? Okay. So it's a very different way to perform type level computations. We're not used to it, but it works, and I actually think it's neater. It looks better. Okay, so I'll repeat the question and you tell me if I understood it correctly. So is there a way to like order them, right, and to return the tuple, but that a tuple such that the indexing is that of the first tuple?
Right.
Would it be possible? It will require a bit of work, maybe a quick hack to do it right now. I'd say like, you could zip. I'm not exactly sure how you would do it. For sure, it's possible, but like you'll have to work a bit, sure. And yeah, because it's pretty specific to your own application. Or if you can find that it's actually a general pattern, then I will very happily add it to HANA. But yeah, it would be possible. You'd have to work a bit. Expression templates. Okay. So do I have time for that? Okay, I think I do. You know what? I actually skipped this example and also the next one because I don't want to run out of time, but we'll go back if we have time at the end, okay? So basically what I'm showing here is just a quick and dirty way. It's a quick implementation of Proto, right? It's like 250 lines and it works. It's very, very basic, I wanted to show like how Anna can help do this, but it's not the most interesting example, so we skip it. There's also this heterogeneous linear algebra library that allows you to build, to have like matrices in which each entry of the matrix can have a different type. So it can be useful to carry the units inside a matrix to make sure that the units fit when you do your computations. So that was actually inspired by a real world use case by Zach Lane, which is just here. So I basically tried to re-implement a library that he had already done using HANA, and it's pretty naive, but it's also like just 200 something lines. So okay, implementation techniques. Yeah, so I want to take my time here because, and we'll go back if we have time. So basically, everything we manipulate in HANA, the most basic structure that we manipulate is a tuple, right? And so we'd like to have an efficient way to implement tuple. And in libc++, for example, tuple is implemented in a kind of recursive way, and it actually sucks at compile time. Really, the performance actually really sucks. So here's my take on it. Wait. So the meat, the real interesting stuff happens here, okay? And listen, okay, what happens here? The idea is that I use the lambda capture as a compiler generated struct with a variadic number of of elements, right? So I use the fact that we can capture a variadic pack inside a lambda, okay, to make the compiler generate a struct with these members for me, okay? And now that lambda that captures the elements, okay, which is actually like the tuple. So the lambda is the tuple. When you call it with a function. When you call it with a function, and it, now I can show it, and it, so you call it with a function. This is the tuple. This is like the core of the tuple. It captures here the elements. When you call it with a function, it shows its guts to the function here. It expands all the members inside of the tuple. It provides a unpacked representation of the elements in the tuple. It provides that to the function. Okay? And that here is just boilerplate to make this into a type, so blah blah blah. Okay. Now, problem, it can be consexpr because we don't have, you know, lambda consexpr in the language. I really wish this will change. We'll talk about it later. But yeah. So that's the idea. Is everybody kind of following me? Here's how you can use it. If you want to retrieve the first element in a tuple, implement it this way. You pass it a function that just considers the first element, discards the rest, and returns the first element. And then so this is like the tuple. This is actually the lambda, so the core of the tuple. And you pass it your function. So it will give you the expanded representation of the members of the tuple here. And you pick whatever you want. So then you can have a way to, you know, fetch efficiently an argument at a given index, and it's possible. It's been implemented. I got this in the bonuses. Yeah.
I got lost on
the
word is unpack into.
Sorry. It's there. So this is basically unpack into here is just this function. Okay. Okay. So yeah. So you know, you give me any number of elements. And then I just make the storage, which is I create the function, then store it in the unpack into here. And then, so when you access it here, unpack into, you're actually referring to the lambda, right here. Is everybody following? Yep. Okay. So that's the idea. And performance. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yep.
Can you go back two slides? So you're capturing the T's. There's no reference there, so it's how are you capturing the references? Does that question make sense?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I should have.
With my value?
Yeah. Okay. So the question is, there is no ref. Are you capturing the references? Our goal here is to actually capture. Is to make a copy, right? When you call us to make tuple, you actually make a copy of whatever you're giving it, because you're storing it in the tuple.
Store references inside the tuple.
What?
You can't store references inside the tuple.
I'm not sure, but I would use like reference wrapper for that anyway.
Okay.
But if you can, and you know, like this is naive, and I don't do perfect forwarding here, but yeah, well. Here, yes, but you know, so I stripped a lot of stuff from these slides because I want to make it just easier to understand. And there are also some implementation issues that I won't talk about. So it might require some little changes to the language, or I would say enhancements, but I think this is worth it. So the green here is the tuple. This is a bad, you know, it's a bad curve. And this is HANA, right? And this is Fusion. So it just including it is like 15 seconds, please. So yeah, and then it just dies at 50 because you can't have a larger than 50. And the reason why, you know, it seems to be sort of the same asymptotics here, it would be because it's probably pre-processed in such a way that, you know, even a large tuple is just actually one. Okay, yeah, so I got a confirmation from someone that really knows its stuff. So yeah, it's actually the reason. So yeah, it's much better with this new implementation technique. Same for the memory usage. And now another function. So what's really neat about these things is that when you use this new alternative way to implement a tuple, you also, there are new ways to implement the related operations that are now open to you. So for example, tuple cat, you just dive into the guts of the first tuple. Okay, and yeah, once you can tuple cat, right, two tuples, you just can do it recursively by folding. You can do it for any number of tuples. So we're just considering the two tuple case. So you dive into the guts of the first tuple. Now you get an expanded representation of the first tuple as a parameter back. Then you just do it again for the second tuple. So you get another parameter back that represents the guts of the second tuple. And then you just concatenate these packs, which is very easy to do, into a new tuple. So that's it. Again, OK, yeah, I'd like to say that the benchmarks are somewhat biased because the benchmarks will actually also the difference between the curves will also contain the difference, you know, for just creating the tuple. So it's pretty hard to do unbiased benchmarks, but I gotta be honest, it's not like the most perfect benchmarks. But still, so this is ugly. This is not that ugly. It's pretty, you know, it's decent at least. Yeah, and so if you ever need to concatenate like two tuples of 450 elements, then please, I want your email because you're doing some like hardcore stuff. Yeah, same for the memory users. Okay, so now what I need from the next version of the language, right? Because this all works, but it could be better. It could be much, much better. And we just have to put a bit of pressure. If we think that this is a good way to go, you know, for metaprogramming, then we got to push the language a bit. If we don't, then, you know, it's just a cool experiment, cool Google Summer of Code project that nobody's going to ever use. But if we think that it's really worthwhile, then we might want to push the language a bit. But I can't do it just by myself. Constexpr lambdas. I want you to stick a constexpr in front of the constructor of the structure that's generated by the compiler, and also in front of its operator parents. That's just reasonable. There is I don't see any reason why it's not that way. And yeah, I'd like that to change. I need lambdas in some unevaluated context. I know there are some issues, implementation issues with this. For example, if you have like the type of, I think if you have the type of a lambda inside a that needs to be an external symbol, then it's pretty hard because you have to like make sure that this type is different from all the other types because lambdas have unique types, and so you get into some weird stuff. But it's actually like a corner case, and I don't think a lot of people would like to have this feature anyway. I don't need it, but I would. Preventing, you know, lambdas from appearing in all unevaluated contexts, even if they're called, you know, I don't need the actual decal type of the lambda. I just want it to be able to, I just want it to appear inside the context, the unevaluated context, and if I call it, and so on. So preventing that from happening just to make sure that the lambda, the types of the lambdas don't appear like in end types, is just like using a nuke to kill a mouse. So I'd like that to change too. And I'd like a bit better handling of parameter packs in captures. So for example here, I'd like to be able to do an init capture with a parameter pack. So Y should be a parameter pack here. Initialize with copies of X. This is useful for some, you know, implementation stuff. And for example, for the tuple, this would be, I need that to be able to perfectly forward to use perfect forwarding from the arguments and to like to initialize, you know, the members of the tuple perfectly. I need that for this reason. So okay, it's all I have. So thank you very much. So I'll take questions, and we still questions, and we have 5 minutes. Any questions? Yeah.
So has this been accepted in the
This hasn't. No. This hasn't. Okay. The question is this into Boost? My answer is no, it isn't. We're working hard for it. I really want that into Boost. Yeah, and eventually in the standard, or I don't know, might be a good idea. Because yeah, I see some kind of, you know, people are pushing to have std apply and more tuple related stuff. Well, my take on this is like, let's do it well. Okay. Yep.
Just to clarify, this only works on C++14, right?
Okay. Yeah. So this is Clang trunk actually. So yeah, C++14, but you know, bug free implementation. So that's Clang trunk. You need Clang trunk to compile it. GCC won't work. Clang 3.5, unfortunately, it won't work. I don't know why, but they closed the branch. They closed the branch for the release just a bit too early, and some bug fixes they didn't get in because it won't compile. Yep.
What if I actually want to use? I have two blocks, separating things that will reference to the first.
I don't get it. Sorry. Views.
Yeah, like what I have from Fusion. Like, say I have two, three big things. I just want the views from first and third. And make two other two references. How do I make it?
With references.
Yeah, that's my question. How do I make it?
First, okay. So the question is, let's say I have a tuple with objects in it, and I want to have a view, like a subview of only some elements, right? You just remove, okay, so first what I would do is store reference wrappers into the tuples, okay, because right now, by the way, right now it's like use it with, you know, friendly types, because if you have too much copy, it's going to be, it's not really optimized for the runtime. So I would say first you use reference wrappers into the first tuple. Okay, if you say your objects are big, and then you just remove the objects that you're not interested in.
Do you think it's worth making it actually just
have
to jump through the reference wrappers?
What?
It sounds like reference wrappers don't have to jump through to get the actual reference. Do you think it's worth making that jump just unnecessary? Like, or like, for cases, like, say, I have a bunch of things that, like, say, I call the standard for as tool, which are all just references, and I just want to slice it.
Well, right now, okay. So the reason is, the question is, do I really have to, jump with to use reference wrapper to and jump around to, which is more complicated, right? To get reference semantics. Okay. So right now it's only value semantics. I wanted to get the interface right. I focused on compile time performance and on you know, correctness of design, but not on runtime performance. So right now, perfect forwarding is not implemented everywhere. Value semantics all over the place. So if you need reference semantics, you're gonna have to give me a bit more time. Yeah.
But in this simple step, actually, you have some kind of ANA view that just uses reference wrapper dense inside, so the user doesn't see.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Just that.
Yeah. Okay. So a comment is, it would be simple to have just like ANA views that do the actual reference jumping around, and yeah, it would be pretty simple. I could look into that. Sure, and I will, because I think people will want reference semantics at some point, definitely. But right now, it's still a bit experimental. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I just want to say that you might not want references in the way you can do it. Really profile and make sure that you're not. I mean, outside of degenerate cases, it's often easier for the compiler to reason about copies of things, and so you actually get better coding if you have the whole thing, except in the degenerate cases, rather than references into the system.
Right, but I just thought there are going to be cases you actually want references, otherwise you don't need to have them at all.
And that's what reference references are. These tuples are same time.
Okay, so the comment is that you might not actually want reference semantics or to use reference wrappers as much as you think. So, okay, so I'm not really going to comment on that. So, but I think it could be possible to make it easier to have reference semantics and use it if you need it, whatever, I don't care. So, yeah, so if there is no more questions, well, we're actually out of time, so we're going to stop here. But if some people are interested, I got some more stuff, you know, like more implementation techniques. This is to access an element at a random access in amortized O1. This is the proposed std apply, which fits in one line. Pretty cool. You just unpack the function in it. And other stuff, so just come talk to me if you're interested. Thank you.